Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Show and a very special Get to Know Your Hosts edition. Ooh, yes, we put out a slightly self-indulgent request for questions about our awesome foursome on Twitter, and you answered in your droves. We were expecting questions to mainly be about Graham's food takes, Graham's kit collection, or Graham's local hairdresser slash bait shop. But there were also other non-Graham topics covered. Amazing. And it's okay that you're all fascinated with Graham, because we are too. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man who has surprisingly strong opinions on Disney's catalogue of animated crab-related songs, Taylor Rockwell.
Hello, I sure do. I didn't realize until I wrote that tweet that I guess there are at least two. I was thinking of only the one, but that one that I was thinking of remains number one in my heart.
Well, wrong. I'm assuming that one would be Tamatoa from Moana, Taylor. I had to look up his name. He's called Tamatoa, and he mentions it in the first line of the song. Indeed, he is a coconut crab.
And he hasn't always been this glam, in case you didn't know. Yes, it is. Tamatoa is my favorite one. And I learned when Moana was on recently, because Moana is always on recently, that at the very end, there's a stinger with him in the credits, and it made me like it even more to know that Joe Lowry probably disliked that even more.
No.
It's very worthwhile. It's better than the Marvel post-credit scene, I would suggest.
I'd agree.
What's the other crab, Taylor? I know there's Sebastian. He's a lobster.
Oh, all right, cool. Well, then there you go. Never mind then. I apologize to our lobster listeners out there. I hope that they don't mind. I don't mean to offend in any way.
He is a rock lobster, very much indeed. All right, also here, a man who has seen as many movies as you've seen unicorns walking through the aisles of your local Target, Joe Lowry. Hello.
That is correct, Ryan Bailey. You don't see many unicorns walking around Target, and I don't see many movies except Moana to know that that crab is absolutely evil. I wish he was mute.
Well, is he not actually evil in the movie? He's a bad guy, right?
Yeah, everything about him is bad, both his motivation and his singing voice. I will die
Gentlemen.
On this hill. Taylor, I saw you trying to stir up controversy on Twitter. I saw Bells hopping in on that. I saw Snavely hopping in on that. I'm watching you.
He's a charming
Gentlemen.
Bad guy, though. Like Mourinho.
I have breaking news here. From the Wikipedia entry, Horatio Theolonius Ignatius Crustaceus Sebastian, a.k.a. Sebastian, is a red Trinidadian crab and servant of King Triton. In your face, Ryan Bailey. In your face.
My childhood. What happened to it?
The entire thing was predicated on, is that why you like hate lobsters to this day? Do you have a secret burning hatred of Sebastian? Is that what's going on?
Shattered. Can't stand them or the B-52s. Yeah. Incredible, Taylor. Incredible.
Hurtful. Hurtful.
All right. Rounding out our group, a man you may have just heard there, a man who was on vacation this weekend, but like me, appeared to spend the entire weekend watching coverage of the Glastonbury Festival. Hello, Graham Ruthven.
Hello, Ryan. Yes, I did. I don't think the money that I spent for that holiday was worthwhile, given that I stayed inside and watched stuff on my laptop from Glastonbury all weekend, as you say. But I think it might actually be my favourite weekend of the whole year. I just watch every act, basically.
I agree.
I enjoyed it very much.
I think it might be a distinctly British thing, because it's quite hard to watch outside of the UK, but I managed to with a little ExpressVPN, former sponsor. Hello. It's a wonderful, wonderful weekend, Graham, but it's great to hear that even when you're on vacation and even when there's no soccer, you still won't spend any time with your family.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. I mean, you have to blame Jack White, Bicep, Idols, Billie Eilish, Kendrick Lamar, Paul McCartney, Squid, who else did I watch? Little Sims, Foles, Metronome. Yeah, they're all to blame, really.
Very good. I watched the whole Idol set on the Saturday morning. It was wonderful. I thought Noel Gallagher was great. We seem to have differing opinions on that, Graham. We'll have a fight in the parking lot afterwards about that. Casey Musgraves was excellent. Paul McCartney was excellent. Dave Grohl and Bruce Springsteen joining
him. Oh, yeah, that was good.
Join in, Joe, if you have heard of any of these names, by the way. Olivia Rodrigo, even. Did you see that, Graham? That was quite interesting.
I did, when she brought out Lily Allen to make a rather poignant statement about something depressing that happened last week.
Yes. So before we get to our listener question show, and perhaps this relates to the show as well, there is an elephant in the room. I was out on Friday night in Rome and sort of having a lovely time and then thinking, there's a lot of people not having a lovely time at this point. And Kacey Musgraves, Olivia Rodrigo, many, many other artists, American artists on the stage at Glastonbury, made some points about the political situation, Taylor, which we've also had some questions about pertaining to this show.
We have. And if you don't want politics mixing with your sports, I'd say go ahead and fast forward about 60 seconds or so, because we had that question from Aaron Gustafson on Twitter. How did we feel about Megan Rapinoe's answer to Jonathan Tannenwald's question when Roe v. Wade was overturned? How are you finding your voice to support every athlete in the soccer space who is now impacted by state restrictions? And basically putting it as succinctly as I can, I think Megan Rapinoe said it well when she summed up the decision as unnecessary and cruel. I'll also be honest and say that my understanding of this question was basically, are you upset by this decision? I would like to know, because it kind of informs whether or not I will enjoy the show. Apologies if that was not the question being asked. But my truth, if that is the question that was being asked, is that I feel rage. I really do. Increasingly so. I feel rage that the women in this country and in my life, including my daughter, have lost a fundamental freedom of control over their own bodies. I feel deeply saddened by that reality. And at this point, that's kind of all I want to say on the topic, because I'm still processing it, which is a nice way of saying that if I keep talking about it, I'll get really angry and yell. I'm sure many other people feel the exact same. But the final thing I would add is that my wife, when I was talking with her about this last night, about whether we should address it on the show, she felt we should, and I obviously agreed. And she pointed out that this felt like yet another in a string of recent sobering reminders that many people in this country don't have the rights they thought they did. I grew up really wanting to believe that I lived in the best country on the planet, because I think it's a lot safer to feel that way. And so to know how many people feel increasingly unsafe and unprotected in this country, really, it just kind of breaks my heart. And we discussed before recording that I would say something, since ultimately none of us feels fully qualified to wade into this conversation. It doesn't really feel like our domain, and I feel like we'll end up saying, I don't know, just not particularly useful things to the overall discourse. I think the general consensus of the show, though, was espoused by Graham, who really simply said, let women decide what's best for their own bodies. As always, Graham said in 10 words what I tend to say in about 100. So well said, Graham, and that's all I would like to say about that.
Yeah, I didn't really know how to address this question, because for me anyway, speaking personally, my view is it's kind of black and white on this. And as I said to you, Taylor, in our chat, I can sum it up pretty quickly. And I think it's a reminder that we as humankind, because obviously I speak as an outsider, I'm not an American, nor do I live in the United States. So maybe my voice doesn't matter all that much in this. But it's a reminder that we have to keep fighting for human rights, because they can be taken away very easily. And that's quite a depressing thought.
There was a tweet going around saying time zones are crazy. In Australia, it's 9 a.m. In Rome, it's 1 a.m. And in America, it's 1942, where minorities and women are still controlled by old white men. I love America dearly, probably more than anything else. But I've got to say, this, there's been a couple things in the last few weeks that have really tested my relationship, I should
just
say.
Just a few weeks, not a few years? You don't want to keep that one going?
I'll say a few weeks as a starting point, Taylor.
All right.
I'm trying to get a visa after all. Anyway, let's carry on with the show. We've got a question here from Chris Batone, who wants us to get deep. He wants us to get personal to kick off our listener questions. Who is everyone's favorite Ninja Turtle? Now, I think there's only one correct answer for this one. Ooh. And I'll be shocked if any of you don't pick the answer I have in my head. So, Joe, you have the option of Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, or Donatello. Which way do you go, Joe?
Okay, I'm really afraid now, Ryan, the way you built that up. I haven't seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in such a long time. I could not tell you what the differences are between them. So I'm looking at them on Google right now to figure out the one that I like the look of the most. As a child, if we're getting personal here, my favorite color was orange. And Michelangelo's little head thing, tie, scarf, eye scarf, his eye scarf is orange. So therefore, I'm going with Michelangelo.
Joe, your level of preparation for this question is second to none, my friend.
Thank you.
Start the way you need to continue, Joe. That was your logic was interesting, but your answer was correct. Taylor.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, then you're not going to be pleased with my answer.
Just because... don't say Donatello.
It's okay, Donatello. It's Donatello. What? He's the best one.
No.
Wow. I think we're going to have some mixed answers here. Because my honest answer as a little kid, it was Leonardo, because I thought the leader was always the coolest. But everybody I knew who was actually cool, from my older brother to my best friends, were all super into Raphael because he's deep and he's emotional and he has interesting weapons that also seem like they could be forks at the same time. But I think I kind of leaned Leonardo, but really wanted to be like Raphael.
Raphael was the Chandler of the group. Sort of wisecracking.
No, the other way, he was the moody one. He was the brooding one who was always like off wandering by himself and contemplating reality of being a sentient turtle.
See, I thought for me that was Donatello. He's just got a big stick and he just sits around and sulks a lot, Greg.
Donatello does machines, Ryan.
Yes, exactly.
Donatello's a party dude, Taylor. He's got nunchucks.
Ryan, you like gadgets. Donatello's the one who does the gadgets, isn't it? I've got that right, have I not?
That's the intro theme song. Donatello
does he have any
machines.
Apple products? Does Donatello have any Apple products? Because that's the only way you're winning Ryan over.
This is actually it. Donatello's more of an Android man, and Ryan has held that against him his whole life.
That checks out.
That's true. Is it genuinely Donatello?
To be fair, Krang is an Android man. Hey! See what I did there? Because he kind of like lives inside of a robot, I think.
You made a funny!
Hey!
That's my Splinter impression.
Thank you.
Donatello was always the one I liked when I was a kid because he did the gadgets, and I liked gadgets. Yeah. I think he'd be a good colleague because I think he would, like, Raphael and Leonardo, they all kind of burst in without any real, well, they don't really think about the task at hand, whereas I think Donatello would think about things ahead of time, and so I think he'd probably be the, if you had to pick a colleague out of the four of them, I think Donatello would be the one you'd go for.
Leonardo is the boring one in the way that, like, no one's favorite X-Men is Cyclops. It's sort of like the leader is never that interesting. Donatello does seem like the most enjoyable, chill one. I feel like we had the question as well, which of us is which one? And Joe, I think, is probably Donatello because it's just sort of mild-mannered and into tech.
The most useful one, frankly, is Donatello and Joe.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we have some very disparate positions on that one, clearly, Chris Bertone. Thank you for the question. But it is clear that none of us, much like PSG's upper management, none of us really like Leonardo. Why don't we move on to YoAdrian1, who says, if you weren't a soccer podcast host, what subject would you host a podcast on? I think it's quite clear for me, gents, it would be a podcast about footballers who live in my brother's neighborhood. Graham, what about you?
Disney theme parks. I'm not kidding. I've hid this for long enough. If we're looking beyond sport, not just football, this is my specialist subject. Don't at me. Not in a sort of Disney adult way. You know, you see those people who, like, cry upon meeting Mickey Mouse. I just enjoy learning about the creative process.
Upon Mickey Mouse. I just want to make that clear.
It was actually Minnie. Like, it was Minnie.
Minnie. I just enjoy learning about the creative process. Guys like Tony Baxter and Joe Rohde and... they kind of took the concept of amusement park, turned it into something more, much more immersive.
Fungineers, and if you're interested, are they Fungineers?
Imagineers. I was literally just going to come on to that. There's a six-part documentary series on Disney Plus called The Imagineering Story. It is genuinely very good, and it's about that creative process, and it's brilliant. So if anyone is at all interested in anything I'm saying, probably not, go and watch that.
So we should look forward to subscribing to Graham Ruthven : Epcot, It's Not So Bad. On wherever you download your podcasts soon.
Excellent. Exactly. Coming soon.
Taylor, what about you?
I wish I had a more like fun answer to this one, but I thought about it in a serious way. And I think mine would probably be either a history of the Ottoman Empire, because I find the Ottoman Empire fascinating and the variations to leadership they took. But then also the big one, I have like history, anthropology, sociology are like my primary interests. That's what I studied in school. So I would say a podcast on the history of food would be really appealing to me. The history of methods of cooking, ancient recipes, the people that inspired them, food as medicine in ancient world, all those things. I'd be very into how dishes spread and how ingredients kind of like crossed the globe. That all definitely appeals.
You definitely have Graham's attention on that one, Tay-Tay.
Any meat pies in there?
Yes, in fact, because I feel like that is, there's probably a story there about why those first came to be and how they became so ubiquitous in terms of easy meals to have on the go. Yeah.
I mean, anything that is pastry or even pizza, right, in Naples was for working men predominantly who had to eat their lunch on the go and it had to, like, you had to hold it in one hand. That's like pies and pizza and stuff like that, is it not?
Yeah, we got a podcast going here.
We do. We're on.
Literally. Yeah. Very meta, Joe. Very meta.
Very Donatello.
Titus Andronicus and all that. That was all pies, wasn't it? I've gone down that road. Anywho, my serious answer, I'll get to you in a minute, Joe. Apologies, I jumped in here. But my serious answer would be, I'd probably do a podcast about the band Oasis. I think it's the thing I know more about anything in this world. Or possibly it would be about early 2000s emo and pop punk. I'm talking like Blink-182,
so, Dashboard Confessional, not 90s Britpop.
I could do a lot on 90s Britpop, definitely, but Oasis would be my specialty. Mark Bojaski also asked, what side of the Blur Oasis divide did Brian fall on? I hope you have your answer there. I like Blur, but it's Oasis. I flew back to the UK last weekend just to watch Noel Gallagher play, as I think I mentioned on a previous show, and I'm a little bit obsessed with Oasis, and I always have been. So that would be my genuine answer, because I also feel like I know a lot more about music than I do about soccer, and I hope that isn't disparaging of my own soccer knowledge and interests, but the way that Joe can break down a game and understand things that other people don't see, I feel like I can kind of do that more with music, if that makes sense. So,
Ryan, is it Noel that you are the fan of between
yes.
the two brothers?
Yes.
Like, is he... Because I really like music, but I don't think that there are bands that I feel that way about. I certainly wouldn't like fly to another country for one. Like, is it the equivalent, basically, from a soccer perspective of like trying to see Messi? Like, basically doing what you can to be able to see Messi in person. Do you see him as like that level of a genius when it comes to music?
Yes. Yes, I think the in-person experience makes it all the more different. But I'm looking at nerdy things. I'm like, oh, he's used that guitar for three songs, and then he's doing that. He's using a capo there, and he's changed the chords there, and he's done that. I'm very obsessed on that micro level, I should say, as well, Taylor.
Taylor, what you just said there about Messi was definitely me with Paul McCartney, like, last month when I felt like I needed to see the like last remaining key Beatle. Sorry, Ringo.
The key Beatle.
Ringo's
he didn't
busy.
Write any songs, did he? Well, he did write a few, but they weren't particularly good. But yeah, Graham, the guy that wrote all the songs, I felt like I needed to see him.
Yellow Submarine called Graham. Hello.
True. Sorry, Ringo.
Graham, David Cross had a joke when George Harrison died. That like at the end of it, he was talking about how much George Harrison had meant to him, and it ends with him saying, "But like, hey, at least now that John and George are dead, we can get a Beatles reunion because you know the other two would do it." So I feel like maybe that speaks to what you're talking about with Ringo.
Oof.
Yes, it does. I just like with Paul McCartney, he's had the same drummer, Abe is his name, and he's brilliant, and he's had the same drummer for 20 years, and Ringo still hasn't had a call.
Oh boy. Yeah, he's very busy in his octopus's garden, Graham, I think is the answer there. Joe, your answer for if you were to have a different podcast to host.
Maybe mine will be a companion podcast for Taylor's, because cooking is what mine would be centered on and around. I think there's some really excellent cooking podcasts out there that have made me enjoy cooking. I don't cook right now as much as I would like to, but maybe it can be a journey from an amateur chef to like a real legit, not restaurant style chef, but you know, someone who knows their way all the way around the
food
kitchen.
Food truck chef.
Yeah, food truck chef. I do quite like food trucks. Something cooking related, and maybe I'll pair it along with Taylor and make the stuff that he's talking about in his.
Sounds like we've got a buddy show there. We've got a food podcast in the works. What do we say?
Damn,
on the feed?
I'm into it. 100% into it.
Food on the feed.
Yep.
And what's your specialty dish, Joe?
I mean, right now it's more baking than cooking, to be honest. Mostly bread, which is a real throwback because Taylor, you and I used to talk about bread a lot on this show. Mostly bread, but I mean, I quite enjoy making pizza from scratch and making pasta and all sorts of other things. There's really not a lot of things I don't enjoy making.
Two things. First of all, Joe once sent me a loaf of bread, in fact, because that's how sweet Joe is. Joe, second of all, do you use different machines when you make your bread?
This is going to be a Donatello tie-in. And sure, yeah, I mean, a KitchenAid stand mixer is always useful. I think we can work with that.
Here we go. I mean, Donatello would be a baker. Like, it's all about the science and measuring. Joe is Donatello, confirmed.
You've buried the lead there. Did you mail a loaf of bread 3,000 miles to Taylor?
Yeah, we just talked about bread so much that it felt like it would be the right... It was a nice mix of trying to be nice and also a gag at the same time. And it was bread, and it did happen. Yeah,
it was annoyingly good. Joe can make good bread. I cannot, so I was annoyed by it. Also very grateful, but mildly annoyed.
I like to think Joe gave the bread... It was like a chain of MLS managers, and each manager passed it to another manager until it made it to the East Coast. And
that's exactly what happened.
Oh boy. All right, thank you very much for that question. Yo, Adrian, let's get in one more before we take a break. Russell Varner, hey Russell, how's it going? Is one of several people who asked, what player or moment made you fall in love with the Sockers? Taylor.
Yeah. It's, I think it answers the question. It's more of a moment, but like, I remember, this is how old I am, downloading clips of goals off the internet and then watching like the 3-second clip that took an hour to download because it was the crowd noise that really pulled me in. Young me was super into the reaction of the crowd when the goal goes in. And that remains sort of my favorite part of watching soccer is just like 60,000 people having a collective experience and being super excited about a ball going into a net is hilarious and amazing all at once. So that remains my favorite part. It's the thing that always kind of pulled me into soccer and made me want to score a goal in front of a bunch of people, which I'm not sure I ever did, but still, the dream lives on.
That's very similar to mine, I'd say, Tate, because my direct answer was it was when I was like 11 or 12 and I started going to games with my dad and my brother. And it was about the smell of the stadium, and it was about that feeling in your chest when your team scores and there's thousands of people collectively cheering. It's really infectious. And there's something very basic and tribal about supporting a soccer team, isn't there? And something a bit silly, and it's arbitrary, really, isn't it, which team we support in the end. But it's also very special, you know, getting that first kit and feeling part of something as well. But then I started thinking about this question more, and I think the thing that made it fun for me back then was being with my dad and brother on a Saturday, every other Saturday. And the more I think about it, the more I think we could have been going to watch badminton. It was more about the ritual of going to games and having that collective experience as well, for me, anyway. Graham, what about you?
You lived in Wimbledon, and the other sport that you chose as an example to go and see was badminton.
Well, because I would actually go watch tennis, Graham.
Right, okay, sure.
Anyway, Graham.
I'm not sure I remember players that I idolised as a kid. I think as an older teenager, Robert Snodgrass was a bit of a hero for me. He played for Stirling Albion on loan. He only played 12 games for us, but he won his promotion. And then he went on to play in the Premier League and for Scotland, and I always thought that was kind of amazing that Albion had played such an important role in his career, and I still think that's amazing. But I think there was definitely a mystique about the Brazil team of 1998 when I was growing up, and I would have been 6 or 7 years old at that time, and I remember R9 being on everything ahead of that World Cup, and that was probably the first tournament that I was truly aware of. So he was kind of the first global superstar, soccer superstar in my eyes. And in terms of moments, I go back to that 98 World Cup, the opener between Scotland and Brazil. I think I've spoken about this before, as my first really vivid memory of football. And I was definitely into football before then, but as a 7 year old, that was probably a pretty formative moment for me as a football fan. And then another moment, Snodgrass, to mention him again, he scored this stunning free kick in a playoff final for Stirling Albion, and I was there, and it was the first season that I'd really followed Albion. There were 2,000 fans at Broadwood, an away stadium. That was an away crowd, and for Stirling Albion, that's a huge crowd. So that's probably my favourite moment as a fan, even to this day, and from there, your fandom of the team just kind of accelerates.
Very nice. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few for me. So I was exposed to soccer. It sounds like exposed to COVID. I was exposed to soccer as a child through some friends of mine that are from Peru, and so their family is very soccer heavy, and I didn't fully appreciate it at the time, but basically leading into sort of after that period leading into the 2014 World Cup, Van Persie's header did some real wonders. I was in Spain at the time, and you could sort of hear the groans from everybody around as they watched that goal happen from Van Persie. That helped a lot, and then Messi helped a lot as well. It's very cliche, but just watching him do things with a soccer ball that I'd never really seen any player in any sport do with their respective sporting equipment. Like, I don't know. It's mesmerizing to watch him play. Maybe slightly less so now, but even still, like, there's so many of those moments with Argentina and with PSG where you can see just how good he is. And then pretty much ever since 2014 and that World Cup, it transitioned from being really captivated by those individual moments and more interested in how the game works and why some teams are good at it and why some teams are bad at it. And that kind of is where I am today and how I think about soccer today.
Nicely done. Thank you very much, Russell, for the question. After the break, we'll be talking about meat pies and much more. Back soon.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our Get to Know Your Host special. This one from Albert Camus Cthulhu. Excuse me if I pronounce it incorrectly, but thank you for the question, Albert. If you were a meat pie, what ingredients would you be made of? The answer is obvious for me, gents. It's a chilies, honey, chipotle, chicken crispers would be entirely the contents of the pie, because I prefer that than having blood in my veins, to have honey chipotle sauce instead. Joe, what about you?
Okay, so I don't really feel a huge need. Let's go two ways with this. I don't really feel a huge need to deviate from what I feel like is a very classic British meat pie, which would have, Graham, just sort of back me up on this, some sort of meat that's cubed, some sort of potato or swede, and then some sort of vegetable in a brown sauce, right? Is that about right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the staple, yeah.
So I think those are unreal. I think they're so good. And I know Graham is the meat pie lover around here, so I'm not trying to infringe on your territory, but I do quite love a pasty. So I don't really feel the need to mess with that, but I also would like to create my own sort of spin-off meat pie that doesn't actually involve any meat. And it's just going to be an apple pie in like a pocket of pastry, because apple pie might be my favorite food on planet Earth. It is so good. It is like what I'll have on my birthday every single year. So I'm just going to stuff apple pie filling inside of a pie crust, which is just apple pie in a different form.
Do you have your apple pie cooling on the windowsill, Joe, before you eat it?
It doesn't. See, Ryan, things don't really cool on the windowsill in Arizona. So you can put them on the windowsill if you want, but you might as well just toss it in the fridge, because that's the only way that thing is going to cool down.
Very good point. Graham, everyone's waiting for your answer to this question.
I'd be a Scotch pie, for obvious reasons, given the name, but also, nobody is really sure what's in a Scotch pie, so apparently Greg's, and I went and Googled this, apparently Greg's switch between mutton and beef, depending on what's the cheapest at any given time, and the only criteria for what's in a Scotch pie is that it's cheap, so that feels pretty apt to describe me as a person. Also, you're most likely to find a Scotch pie at the football, and again, pretty apt comparison for me, I think.
Excellent logic. Taylor, how about you?
I'm still reeling from Joe's meat pie being an apple pie. That's great.
You're welcome.
Joe, for me, buttery puff pastry, ground lamb with rosemary, red pepper flakes, and garlic, sautéed kale, feta cheese. There's your meat pie.
Of course.
Oh, wow.
Of course, Taylor. Of course you went that direction.
What do you mean?
Is that served with a craft beer as well?
No, but maybe, if you want to.
Is it served
with a Budweiser, Graham? How about that?
Coors Light.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for that question. Danny
but also
Kane.
No.
Danny Kane has asked, what's the one dream job each of you would leave TSS for? A very good question here. For me, I think I'm going to come back to music. I'd be a touring musician if I could be anything, because I think playing live music is my favorite thing to do. I got to do it for the first time last week in more than a year, and I found it rather wonderful. But I'm not going anywhere from TSS. Don't worry. No bands are picking me up to go tour at this point. Taylor, what about you? What's the dream job you would leave this gig for?
Obvious one. T-Rex Wrangler.
Actually?
Did you need more? I mean, because that's kind of my answer.
No,
like, come on. If we're going dream job, I need Jurassic Park to be real. And then we're going to have actual fences and well-designed facilities, and nothing will ever go wrong because we spared no expense. And then, yeah, I'll be a T-Rex Wrangler, and ideally I will one day ride a T-Rex or become one myself. Maybe that should be my ultimate goal, much like the dad and stepbrothers. I just want to be a T-Rex.
Are you going down the Sam Neill route or the Chris Pratt route, which feels more like your sort of vibe?
I feel like you don't need to ask that question. I feel like you just know the answer to that, but the answer is Sam Neill.
Yes. Of course. Correct.
Yes. So no standing, holding your hand out straight, which is how you wrangle a dinosaur, according to Chris Pratt, right?
Yeah, while dressed like Han Solo. Precisely. Not so much. I want to be the guy who doesn't know how a seatbelt works somehow, which I understand is a metaphor for the movie, but that is still one of the more ridiculous moments of like, look how out of touch he is. He doesn't know how to use a seatbelt. That's not great. That's not great, Sam Neill.
Graham, how about you?
Well, I would have said F1 driver because a few years ago they only did about 18 races a year, and that sounds pretty sweet to me. But now they're upping that to 25 and there's talk of 26. That's way, way, way too much work. So I'm just going to say someone who sits at home, watches TV, watches football, speaks into a microphone every few days, gets a laptop of out every so often. But actually, pretty much what I do just now, I think, is...
Who's going to pay you to do that?
That's the question I ask every day.
Excellent. Joe, how about you?
I want to be Guy Fieri. I want his job, for real. That's not a joke. I would love to be...
What is
first
job?
Of all,
mayor
first
of Flavortown.
All, yeah, mayor of he has many titles, Graham. Mayor of Flavortown, Triple D captain, Triple G captain as well. There's some other spinoff shows on Food Network that are not nearly as good, but still sort of under the Guy Fieri umbrella. I'll do those too, darn it, just because that's a pretty sweet job. I was thinking food critic at first when I read this question, and then I thought, no, that's kind of, at least in my mind, it's kind of stuffy and too prestigious. I want to be Guy Fieri on TV just without the bleached frosted tips because I don't think I could quite pull those off.
Joe, I like that my original answer for this one, my serious answer for this one was celebrity chef.
Nice.
Because I like the idea of getting to go around and judge food competitions but not have to cook under pressure myself. So I feel like we're in the same line. And I would add, Guy Fieri, though he does get the groans and the eye rolls, I think also raised something like $25 million for workers during the pandemic. So, Joe, that also feels up your alley. Like,
who,
thoughtful but also caring about food. And, yeah, frosted tips with giant glasses. Let's get it going.
Who would dare roll their eyes at Guy Fieri? I can't even fathom that. That is one step too far, Taylor.
I don't think I've
ever seen... I'm learning so many things today, and it makes me very happy.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one of his shows. I'm sorry to say, Joe, but all I can think of is he looks like he might be in Smash Mouth.
Yeah, you could put him in any number of different bands. Ryan, need to go fix that right now.
They have a vacancy, I believe. Last time they caught fire on social media was for their lead singer not performing well. So maybe Guy Fieri could do double duty. I love that Joe, like, knows nothing about the Ninja Turtles, doesn't watch movies, but has strong opinions on Guy Fieri.
I love the Food Network. I love the Food Network. That is like, if I'm not watching soccer or watching some sort of recurring TV show or whatever it is, the Food Network is my absolute jam.
Joe, have you watched the original Iron Chef?
Bits and pieces. Not a ton of it.
The original one from Japan,
yeah.
That guy who pretends to be like the food chairman is definitely just a musical theater, like, performer.
Good.
Like, I saw him perform Les Mis, so that's also very strange to me, but I love that competition so much.
So good.
All right. You're listening to the Total Food Show. We are going through our listener questions right now. Here's one from Brian Hansen. Which co-hosts have actually met the others in person? This is a very interesting question. I know I have met Taylor Rockwell several times.
Yep.
I don't think I've met Graham Rutherford. We started working together, I'm going to say, around 10 years ago on the old Bleacher Report. But I don't think... Well, I refuse to go to Scotland on principle, so I haven't met you there, certainly.
Well, I'm in London this coming weekend, so you know maybe you could fly over and visit me, just like you've visited Noel Gallagher, a man that you have never spoken to in your life before. Well, I presume maybe you have, actually.
Nah, I'm all right. I don't think I've met Joe either.
No. So I haven't met Ryan or Graham, but I have met Taylor. That was in Seattle for MLS Cup a couple of years back. And yeah, I haven't met either of the British fellas.
Graham? Is that the only time we've been to? Haven't we been around each other once more since then, or was it only Seattle?
I thought it was just Seattle, but now you have me doubting.
No, you might be right. But I definitely thought it was two. But maybe it was just Seattle. And then Ryan, we met in New York, we met in Charlotte. Graham, I don't think we have ever met, sadly. Although we've known each other for lifetimes.
I've not met many people, to be fair. I am the archetypal work from home podcaster. but I think that is going to hopefully change at some point fairly soon, because we have spoken about it. But the three of you could be bots as far as I'm concerned. Maybe this is all
we're all AI. Yeah.
Graham, I would love to meet you in London at some time for a drink, but the airports are not great right now.
I have heard that. That's why I'm going on train, and the trains are also terrible, so I'm looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Travel. Awesome. All right, Austin Janicki asks, which of the four co-hosts is most likely to sink a three-pointer? I'm thinking Joe is interested in the basketballs. Does that mean he's most likely, Joe?
I would wager it's not you, Ryan, because of how you say basketballs every time. And I would also wager that it's probably not Graham, just given the cultural differences. And Taylor, I don't really see you as much of a basketball player, to be totally honest.
Hurtful and accurate.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure we talked about that before. So I did play basketball growing up in all through high school. I am not much of a shooter, which just means I'm a bad basketball player, because that's pretty much how that works now. But yeah, I think of the four of us, it is I.
What if I told you, Joe, that I played on my school basketball team, I had a hoop at home, and I'm 6'2"?
Yeah, I'm imagining like a little Tykes hoop. Is that about right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. The answer is it's still you.
My answer is unchanged.
Joe, I have another question for you. If you're practicing free throws, I hope this will make sense, but is your method to like analyze your shot and figure out what you're doing wrong and slowly fine tune it? Or is it just repetition over and over and over again until you get kind of the rhythm? Cause my assumption is that you will like tinker and adjust and eventually you end up hitting like 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, I think those things are not mutually exclusive. Like you're tinkering as you're getting the reps cause you still need the reps, but at the same time, you should be looking at your shot to figure out, okay, what is wrong? Is which finger's coming off the ball last? Where is my actual wrist pointed? How are my feet set up? Is my shoulder in line? Like, you should be thinking through some of those different things, but also just shooting the basketball a lot, which I did, but still didn't end up being very good at basketball.
And Graham would just dunk from the three-point line. Little known fact, Graham has incredible vertical.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite tall. That's the only thing I've got going for me with basketball.
Let's do that. Let's do that real quick. So, Ryan, you said you're 6'2". Is that actually true, or are we just pulling my leg?
That's true, and also I did play on my team.
Okay. At what age, also, while we're on that?
Up to about 14, so not
okay,
super old.
Nice. Okay, so Ryan is 6'2". Graham, how tall are you?
Yeah, 6'2 as well.
Okay. Taylor, you're shorter than that, as am I.
I'm 6'5".
I'm 5'11".
So I'm the shortest of us all, because I'm 5'10". So yeah, man, it should be you guys who are better at basketball.
See, I'm 5'11
and 3/4, and I'm real bitter about it.
I wouldn't say I'm amazing at soccer, but I think if you start a sport as a child, you tend to have the base technique, and that's what I have with soccer, and I just don't have, because I never had that exposure with basketball, I don't think I've got that base technique. I could probably dribble, but shooting the ball, I'm definitely no Steph Curry.
Yeah, and flip that around for me, because I didn't play much soccer as a child. I played it, you know, at 4 and 5 and then stopped until I was in high school. So I missed all the formative development years for soccer, but I did play plenty of basketball sort of in that time frame.
Good stuff. Austin, thank you for the question. We've had quite a few ruminations on why is Ryan in Italy? Why did Ryan leave Charlotte? Jeremy White asks a question for Brian. Nice touch. What brought you to the US initially, and what do you love most about American culture? Are there any British things you missed when living in the US or in Italy now? Without going into too much detail, I came to the US in 2011 because my wife got a job there. She works in international schools. And that is the reason we've come to Italy as well, because she got an opportunity here. She's on a 2-year contract here. And we're going to go back to Charlotte next year. That is the plan anyway. So we're just doing a little sojourn in Europe at the moment. And the story of when we went to the US, I've always loved America and American culture, obviously. She applied for this job and didn't think much of it until she got the call and said, you've got the job. It's either in Charlotte or Chicago. You have 24 hours to decide. And here we are sitting there in London, having been to neither and not having heard of one of them. And we ended up picking Charlotte. We were sold on the weather and no regrets, because it's my favorite place in the world. But as to why, you know, my love of American culture or whatnot, I think maybe Graham can attest to this, that as Brits, you grow up on American culture, essentially, the cartoons, the TV shows, the films. I just love the wide open space. I love the cars. I love that it's massive and it's varied. You've got every climate you could ever need in the States. And I feel like it's just, I don't know if you feel like this, Graham, but it's a bit more, it just feels a bit more glamorous than the UK.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like not difficult with Glasgow, to be fair.
Yeah,
to be more glamorous than here.
The way I put it is like the UK is like watching TV in black and white, but the US feels like you're in 4K Technicolor, basically. Which may, I don't want to disparage the UK too much, but that's the sort of kind of feeling I get. And that, I love that positivity that Americans have and the friendliness. And the UK has gotten a lot better in both those respects, I would say, in the last decade or so. But still, that stands out to me. Anything I
hey, Ryan,
missed?
Shut up for a second. I got something to say. No,
go on.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, there it is. Speaking of that, Italy. the question asked if there's any British things I missed in the US or Italy.
Nando's.
Number one on the list. Number one with a bullet, Graham.
Is that, wait, hold on. Is Nando's British? I don't think I'm going to give you all that one. I feel like Portugal would like a word.
So Peri Peri is Portuguese, but I feel like Nando's might actually be a South African company that is most popular in Britain. Slightly strange mix, but I believe that is the case.
Once again, Graham is accurate, but it is very much part of UK culture and it's something I miss. I had one when it came back last weekend, for example. I'd say probably I miss my family, but Nando's is a close second. Also, decent, cheap tea bags, which are hard to come by both in the US yeah. and in Italy. And the same thing I miss... From the thing I miss from the US now, casual dining, Starbucks, and once again to ruminate on the theme of music, because I used to love going to watch live music and play live music, and not a lot of the touring bands are like come down to southern Italy. So that's my answer. Was that wasn't too soppy, was it, Taylor?
No, not at all.
Good.
The other things, I know this isn't the question at all, but while we're naming things that Britain, if I live in America, things I would miss from Britain, biscuits. I think Britain does great biscuits. And here's a big one, right? This is maybe controversial. Chocolate. British chocolate, Cadbury's, is so much better than... I'm sure there is good American chocolate, but like the standard Hershey's chocolate is no good. No good.
100% on that, Graham. Yes, whenever we would go back to the UK, we'd fill a suitcase up with Cadbury's, basically, because Hershey's tastes like vomit, and I don't care who would care to argue with that. And I hope they're not a sponsor on this particular podcast. They're not, are they, Taylor?
Christian Pulisic is coming after you right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pennsylvania. I don't mean it. I do mean it. One more Ryan-centric question from Yaz Nasty. What is Ryan's favorite song off of Clarity? That's a Jimmy Eat World album. Jimmy Eat World, one of my favorite bands. And does it frustrate him to know Joe has probably bumped into Jim Adkins, the singer from Jimmy Eat World, a dozen times at their local TJs without knowing he is the genius who penned For Me, This Is Heaven? Joe, are you aware of Jimmy Eat World? I think they're from Mesa, is Mesa part of the Phoenix metropolis?
It's a suburb. Yeah, it's a suburb of Phoenix. So I know of Jimmy Eat World. Ryan, I'm glad you explained who Jim Adkins was, because I did not know who he is.
Thank you. You probably have bumped into him at TJ's getting some wine or whatnot, I imagine. Frozen pizza. Well, you probably shop a little nicer than that, having heard your food tastes. But my favorite song off of Clarity is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's called Table for Glasses. It's the opening track. I also very much like Goodbye Sky Harbor, the final track, because all the lyrics...
Airport.
Yeah, there you go. And it's actually all the lyrics in that song, Joe, are taken from the book A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. And it's very cleverly done. That is my favorite album ever. And I've seen Jimmy Eat World 16 times live. I'm not counting.
And can you play these tracks, Ryan? I know you like your guitar.
Sure can. But it's kind of like... You shouldn't cover Smells Like Teen Spirit because there's nothing much you can do to it. So I wouldn't necessarily do it on the reg, Graham, if that makes sense.
But like Smoke in the Water or Seven Nation Army or something like that. Quite simplistic, is it?
Yeah. Well, what are you saying? Jimmy Eat World is simplistic.
I don't know Jimmy Eat World that well, so you tell me.
No, they have pop sensibilities, Graham, but they have some quite complex things going on.
Graham, you watch yourself there. You watch yourself. Be careful.
Taylor, Jimmy Eat World, yay, nay?
Lucky Denver Mint, man. That's my favorite track off Clarity.
Yeah. It's a good album, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have fond memories of Jimmy Eat World from high school.
Good stuff. Why don't we go to a Joe-centric question before we hit a break again? From Scruffy Jack, good handle. For Joe, best things to do in Arizona besides the Grand Canyon. My family might plan a vacay out there this winter. Joe,
Nice. So I'm glad, first of all, Scruffy Jack, that you specified that you're coming in the winter, because my summer list of things to do was going to be extremely different than this one.
It
was mostly going to be, yeah, stay inside, get as close to air conditioning as you can. In terms of the winter, I know you mentioned not the Grand Canyon. Everybody kind of knows about the Grand Canyon already, but there are so many other really beautiful spots in northern Arizona. Ryan, you came down to Arizona not too long ago, right? And you did some of the northern Arizona hiking stuff, and there's so many beautiful spots. Sedona is really pretty. Payson and some of the other smaller towns in northern Arizona are quite nice. There's not always a ton to do in some of those smaller areas, but still, if you're looking to do outdoorsy stuff, that's a really good spot. If you want to come down to Phoenix itself, which is, you know, where I am and where I recommend outside of doing some of those more hikey things up north, I would say eat a lot. I think there's a lot of really good food in Arizona of all sorts of different cuisines and kinds. In downtown Gilbert, there's a really good barbecue spot called Joe's Barbecue. No relation to myself as a fellow Joe, but I do have to give it props because it is also owned by a Joe. So you got to respect that. And then some really good Mexican food. There's so much to bring in the Guy Fieri tie-in. Guy Fieri went to a place called Los Taquitos, and they have a couple different locations, and it is excellent. There's so much other good food as well. That's just barely scratching the surface. But yeah, eat, maybe hike some in northern Arizona. There's plenty of hiking to do down in Phoenix itself as well if you are willing to drive just a little bit to get a little more outside the city. But yeah, I really love Arizona and would certainly recommend coming to visit, especially in the winter.
Yeah, I went just over a year ago, Joe, as you say, and I thought we did a bunch of the national parks, basically, and it was absolutely stunning. I thought Sedona was out of this world. I think Grand Canyon's probably the least interesting of the national parks, in fact. And I had some very good food as well, and I think Arizona is wonderful, and I'm very glad that we organized a trip to go there. You live in a lovely state, Joe. It's lovely, even if you have weird time zones and stuff.
we don't mess with daylight savings time, and it is really difficult at times to live here in the summer. I mean, air conditioning makes that really not that much of a factor anymore, but it's not pleasant to be in Arizona for at least stretches of the summer. But man, the winter is beautiful, and if you can get out and explore and just spend time outside, and if you can handle it, it is worth your time.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Joseph. Thank you very much for the question, Scruffy Jack. We'll be back with more after this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. I've got a Taylor and a Graham-specific question coming up. Let's start with Graham's from Patrick Delaney. What's your favorite FM save, football manager save you've ever done? Who was it with? What did you win? Any other memorable aspects? You can tell a lot by a man by how they play football manager.
Okay, so my favorite save, and I roughly have a different save about every three or four months. So my favorite save that I can remember recently, so maybe there's one years ago that was better than this, but I started out, and I've done this a few times, I started out unemployed and I apply for jobs and I get one through interviews. You have to kind of make yourself either a former professional footballer or a former international player, otherwise you just don't get any offers at all. But this specific save I started out at Forfar in Scotland. I moved on to Dunfermline, got them promoted to the Scottish Premiership. From there, I got the Hearts job. I got Hearts into the Europa League. From there, I got the Nottingham Forest job. And I went back and looked at this save to get it all correct. So I then got Nottingham Forest up into the Premier League. I made the semi-finals of the FA Cup, got absolutely smashed by Manchester United 5-1. But nonetheless, got the Newcastle job. Didn't do all that well with them. That was a bit of a sticky patch. But from there, I got the Scotland job, took them to the 2030 World Cup. Made the semi-finals, got put out by Sweden, which was disappointing because I felt I could have beat them. Billy Gilmore made the team of the tournament, so, you know, it is accurate after all. The problem after that was by the time you get to about 2030, you start to get teams full of regens and it takes a lot of scouting and stuff to have any sort of knowledge of the game. So I sort of drop off after you get about 10 seasons in. That tends to be when I I start a save when you lose all sense of realism and every team is full of players you've never even heard of or don't even exist because they just add random regens into the game. But that's probably the best recent save I've had. Back in the Champ Man days, which was like 10, 15 years ago, I remember winning the Champions League with Albion Rovers, a lower league Scottish team. Sunday Olise was my best player. It is a lot tougher to do that sort of thing in the new games. You can't really take a team from the bottom to the very top anymore because they've tried to make things a bit more realistic. So I like to jump between teams and try and get my manager as high as possible.
So Patrick Delaney in his question, Graham, said you can tell a lot by a man by how they play Football Manager. What do we tell about you apart from that you've got too much free time?
I think the fact that I start unemployed kind of maybe says I've got low self-esteem or something like that. Otherwise you would start at Barcelona or Real Madrid or something.
Good stuff. Well, you like the journey. It's all about the journey rather than the destination.
Indeed.
Right, Graham? Just
yeah,
like life.
Absolutely. I like to see how far you can get before I hit that 10-season threshold.
Very good. Thank you, Patrick. One for Taylor from Wes in Japan. Your favourite band from Richmond. Now, Taylor, I couldn't think of any off the top of my head. I know Mumford & Sons are from Wimbledon, which is about 6 miles from Richmond. But any other suggestions? I've got the right stick.
I see what you've done here. Yeah. Yes, Richmond is in fact named for Richmond upon Thames, a city / town in England. But I'm assuming Western Japan was referring to Richmond, Virginia. And I would say the best band. There aren't that many to come out of Richmond. I would say Gwar. Gwar is kind of the Richmond institution. If you're not familiar with them, do some Googling and prepare to be confused. they are strange. They are thrash metal. They have very elaborate costumes. I think they are, I guess the best way to put it would be like space barbarians is their characters that they play. They play loud music. They tend to offend, but they are an institution. They have a bar here in Richmond. If you broaden this to favorite act from Richmond, then the answer is, of course, Pusha T, who is from Virginia Beach. Pharrell, also from Virginia Beach, but Pusha T is my favorite Virginia musician. Gwar, I think the best band from Richmond.
Gwar, I don't know much about their oeuvre, Taylor, but they belong in my head to the Slipknot school of wearing silly costumes.
See, here's the thing. I instantly push back on that because I cannot stand Slipknot. So I think, but I know what you mean, and they probably are, and that's just my own bias showing, but they're just sort of like punk, but a little bit ska thrown in there too, and then they're singing about ridiculous things. So I guess so, but it's less overtly mean, I guess, and more so playfully mean.
What's the best band for each of the four hosts from where they're from? Ryan, who would you nominate for?
From London?
Not London. You need to be more specific than that.
Okay, from my
not this again.
My hometown of Dartford, where I grew up, Mick Jagger went to my school. I'll say the Rolling Stones.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I've set the bar quite high there, Graham. What about you?
Yeah, I thought I was good. Well, I'd say Glasgow. I know it's not technically my hometown, but my adopted hometown. So like Mogwai, Franz Ferdinand, Biffy Clyro from just down the road, Travis, Texas, quite a few bands. But yeah, I think the Rolling Stones beat them all.
And of course, we know for Joe, it's Jimmy Eat World, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I'm allowed to say anything else, so...
Correct. All right. Thank you very much, Wes in Japan, for that one. Lloyd Hybron, Taylor asks, have you banned Ryan Bailey from USMNT-related episodes, or does he just refuse to appear? Taylor.
It's a good question. Yes, unofficially banned. But no, the real answer would be, basically, I don't think we ever really discussed it, but we started off with each of you doing different shows, sort of. I think like it was me and Ryan doing a weekend review. Then Graham started joining us for that. It was me and Joe talking about Americans Abroad. I can't remember if it was all of us immediately doing listener questions or how that worked. But there are, if I'm being totally candid, there are obviously budgetary things about going from a podcast with two hosts to a podcast with four hosts. Makes it that you got to kind of consider some different things. But I think my assumption initially, and even since then, is basically that it would be sort of like taking a friend along with you and another friend to go see, let's say like Ryan took me to go see Jimmy Eat World along with another one of his friends who is super into Jimmy Eat World. And the two of them are like nerding out and singing every song and wearing the shirt of the band, even though that's not like the cool thing, but they don't care because they love him that much. And then I'm over there just sort of like, all right, any other bands happening or should we keep this moving? What are we doing? Like, that's kind of what I imagine. It would be Ryan drumming his fingers and being very confused why we cared so much about like a college soccer player for like a 20-minute segment of a show. So that was sort of my assumption. It was basically saving Ryan from pain. But I also think Ryan might be good at keeping things moving when we do get into the weeds. So maybe that's a thing that we should open up. Ryan, you want to talk to USA?
The truth is there's actually a quota of British accents allowed by the American media to talk about American soccer. And Ryan would just tip it over the threshold. Although now that Arlo White has seemingly left soccer, maybe Ryan, there's a free spot now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to any Saudi Gulf leagues or anything at this point, so I can stick around here for sure. Yeah, I would very much like to be on US17 shows, but Taylor, it's something we've never discussed. And I think, as we say, I'm not appearing on every show, and I would like to do so in the future, unless I am shadow banned. We'll find out, I guess.
No, I mean, I think, okay, then here's the rule. You can't refer to every player as probably born in England or not as good as an England player. That's the only thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I was wondering if you were actually going to commit to that.
I can't stick to that. Yeah.
But no, we can do that. We can definitely do that. That's it's a fair thing. It's one of those. I don't know if you all work like this. I will be like honest and say like I think I am ultimately like pretty dumb. Like I think I have a caveman brain a little bit, and there's stuff where like my wife never told me that she doesn't drink red wine in the summer, and I was like, "Oh, it might be a little bit chilly," which like it doesn't make sense because it's the summer. So I bought red wine, and she was like, "I don't drink that. I don't think I've ever told you that." And now I will never buy red wine again in the summer because she told me that. It requires like me being told a thing for me to understand a thing. And I think I've just sort of been like, I'm assuming Ryan doesn't want to do US stuff, so we'll just do that one. But now that I know he does, Ryan, you're still shadow banned until you refer to Gio Reyna as fully American and not at all English.
Never.
But no, let's make that happen then. Let's get all four of us on some US shows then.
Love it. Sounds good. Excellent. Thank you, Lloyd, for putting the band-aid on this wound or pulling it off. I'm not sure what is the correct analogy for this one, but we're all clear on this one. Thank you very much. Let's do a few more. A few people, Ed Ritter and Gibran Chavez-Gudino, wanted to know, guys, about our kids and our families. They also wanted our socials, our list of fears, our blood types, and passwords for our popular email servers. Now, just kidding on the last parts, but they'd like to hear more about our significant others, what they do for work, and our families. Whatever you're willing to share, gents. Graham, would you care to share anything on that subject?
Yeah, so I'll start off with my daughter, who will be 3 in 2 weeks. She is full on. Some kids I've noticed are quite placid and you can sit them down and they will stay there. Not Sophie. She will not do that. We were away over the weekend and she sat in the back of the car on the way home this morning, dressed as Belle from Beauty and the Beast, singing songs from Encanto all the way from the Lake District up to Glasgow. And this was after a night during which she knocked on our bedroom door at 3 a.m. to tell us that a spider was crawling up her leg and that a bee had stolen all her toys. So there's always something to keep you on your toes with Sophie. And Sophie, my wife, Lucy, and I, we had Sophie, as I say, in 2019. She's coming up for 3. So that is our little family.
Very nice.
Did you, Graham, catch the bee or not?
Yeah, what's up?
I don't go anywhere near bees, Joe.
That's actually fair. That's the right call.
The new
those are dangerous.
The Netflix
I'm
show,
not a sadist.
The Netflix show Man vs. Bee that's just come on. I think that was based on your life, right?
Definitely.
Graham?
I have not seen that show. What is this show?
Rowan Atkinson, Chasing a Bee. That's the
premise. Of course it's Rowan Atkinson. His life and career has been building up to a Netflix show called Man vs. Bee.
Indeed. Joe, anything you care to share on this one?
Sure. So I don't have any kids and I'm not married, so that's pretty straightforward. But I do have a wonderful fiance who is great and will be married in a few months. Huzzah. I am really excited. That sounded like fake excitement, but I am. I'm very thankful.
Huzzah. Joe, you say huzzah a lot. Have you watched the show The Great, which is a wonderful TV show on Hulu?
So, here, Ryan, do you want to answer that question, or should I guess? No, I'll do it. No, I have not.
It's a popular catchphrase from that show, and it's an excellent show. Should you ever indulge in a TV show of any kind, Joe, I recommend that one.
Will do.
Tay-Tay?
Yes, sir.
How about you?
Talk about things? Talk about family?
Yeah.
My wife, Margaret, and I met in 2008. We grew up in the same area, but I did not know her growing up. I knew her brothers, and it was her brother that introduced us. We got married in 2013, and we had our one and only child in 2020. Her name is Reverie Nahir Rockwell. Reverie is from a classical piece that I think translates to to be like blissfully lost in one's own thoughts, which my wife liked a lot and she loves that piece. It's by a musician whose name I cannot pronounce because a juvenile coworker of mine at the record store pronounced it deliberately wrong, and that's how I will pronounce it forever, so you can look that one up. And her second name, Nahir, is the Turkish word for river, because we lived on the river in Turkey. We live on the river here in Richmond, and we like it quite a bit. And my biggest thing I've learned about being a parent is that kids, especially at her age, she's a little over a year and a half now, are basically mirrors. And so you learn really quickly that they pick up on the things that you do and they start doing them themselves. And if you don't do things well or you handle things the wrong way and you see them do it, you realize like, oh, no, I got to work on that. So it's a good mirror into your who you are as a person. And it can be, much like every mirror, a flattering mirror or a terrifying mirror.
Very nice. I'll go last. I met my wife, my lovely wife, at university. We were married in 2011, shortly before we moved to the USA together. As I mentioned, she is the reason I got to live the American dream, and will do again shortly as well with her employment. We have two children. They are both girls. They are 7 and 9. They are amazing. The youngest girl is the smallest and loudest person I've ever met. The eldest girl is called Jessica, who is named after, at least in part, an Allman Brothers song, which I like very much. And that's about it. My other daughter's called Madison because we're basic. There you go. That's the answer.
That's well said. That's good.
Basic Bailey.
Indeed. Living up to my true values there. Thank you very much to all who asked about that. Let's go to Sad Ocho Cinco. Aww. Ocho Cinco was at Philadelphia Union this weekend. I don't know if anyone saw that. He was having a great time.
Yeah.
He was not sad. Do you have a soccer opinion now that has changed significantly over time? And do you have a life opinion that has changed significantly over time? I'll go first. My soccer opinion that's changed significantly over time is that the US is a soccer country. And I've experienced that firsthand because I've very much seen it grow into one. When I first arrived in the States over a decade ago, I felt like being a soccer person and writing about soccer every day, it didn't feel like it was part of the mainstream conversation per se. And that might be because my circles changed and I got more ingrained into the US soccer scene as time went on. But I felt like the analogy I always give people is when we first moved to the States, when we went to the beach, people, kids and young adults would be throwing a ball. And now when you go there, they're all kicking one and they're wearing Barcelona shirts. I think that's a real difference. You've seen a real sea change in soccer in the US, and it's only getting more and more popular. You know, you go to the bar near where we lived 10 years ago, and they wouldn't be showing soccer at 4 p.m. on the screen. Don't ask why I'm going to the bar at 4 p.m., by the way. But if you go there...
Because the Chili's is closed?
Exactly, yeah. You've got to get the early bird special. If you go there now, there very much is soccer on the TV. So that would be something that's changed through experience, I would say. And that's probably something you'd all agree with as well. I'll leave the life stuff for now. But Graham, anything for you?
My opinion's changed from week to week, so both on soccer and life. So it's kind of difficult to keep track of things. So I had to have a think about this. A soccer one is the Europa League is definitely something I've changed my mind on over the years. I used to mock it and see it as pretty pointless, and now I think it might be arguably my favourite competition of all the competitions. I think it's brilliant, and it might not have the big blockbuster matches that the Champions League have, but you learn something different about every team that you watch, and there's different players, and you learn something about different places from countries that don't always get the spotlight. And I always feel like I learn something when I watch the Europa League. So that's something I have definitely over the last 10 years, I would say, have grown to love when before I wasn't a fan.
Lovely. Joe.
For me, and I kind of referenced this earlier as far as when I first got into soccer or near that time, I got really interested in the strategy behind the game, and I'm still very interested in that. And I think it's an important part of the game that doesn't get enough coverage from a lot of folks in mainstream media and doesn't even really get focused on enough in coaching situations and within coaching staffs and teams. But I think one thing that's changed for me is maybe how important that is. I still think it's important and probably not important enough, but I moved all the way from one end of this spectrum a little bit back towards the middle over the years, and as I've watched more soccer and thought about the game more and read other people talk about it and listened and all of those different things, I think I've realized that those things are important, but I mean, Julian Nagelsmann has this quote about how you can know everything about the tactical side, but if you can't relate to people, none of that matters, right? So it is important also to find the balance between those things. And I think I've landed now a little bit closer to the middle, still on the side of tactics being important, absolutely. But I think that's one thing that's changed for me pretty drastically. It might feel like a minor thing, but that has changed how I view and think about soccer over time.
And finally, Tata.
Yeah, mine's maybe a little bit depressing, to be honest, because I think like there are people who keep their like optimism or their naivete, depending on how you want to see it, as they go. And I think that is to be commended, because I think that's really hard. For me, it's basically been over time caring or being interested less and less in the players themselves, because I think what we've learned, especially in recent history, is that if you are sort of all in on a person and you have all these like, this guy does this and he's amazing in this and he's such a good guy and this and that, like, you never know the full story. And I guess the best way to explain this would be that when we first got a dog, luckily it was a girl, but if it had been a boy, I think we would have probably named it Giggsy. It would have been after Ryan Giggs. And that is a very strange person who I like idolized as a kid and now am not really comfortable talking about anymore. And so I think for me, it's always been like, you never know what's going on. So sort of putting all of your faith into a 21-year-old who has a ton of stuff going on in their life and expecting them to be a perfect person is only going to set you up for having to have, I don't know, awkward conversations that you don't really need to have or want to have. And so I think that's like a big thing that I've sort of evolved on. But with that, I think it's kind of a mutual evolution that I also still try to remember that they are people, that they are young players who you don't know what's going on. Their dog could have died. Their mom could be sick. And that factors into their performance. And so I think I always try to kind of veer on the side of like, yeah, he had a bad game. He didn't look as sharp as he normally does. But, you know, we'll see what happens next week. And maybe sometimes that's boring because a hot take is better and saying, oh, he's trash. He's not good enough for this team. That is an approach people take. But for me, it just, you end up advocating a position that then next week, if they're not trash, you have to go back on. And then suddenly you're just saying conflicting things all the time about fundamentally a person who, like, I wouldn't want myself talked about in that way. So I would like to not talk about a person in that way. So I think that's sort of how I've evolved, or how my opinion on talking about soccer and thinking about soccer has changed.
Yeah, you're right. That was depressing.
Yep. It sure was.
Thank you very much for the question there. Now, we've had a wonderful time answering listener questions today. I've really enjoyed this episode. Thank you very much to everyone who submitted a question. Gents, we got a choice now. We're at about an hour of recording. We can all go on our merry little way, or we can have a little bonus fun and reintroduce the Wikipedia game.
Game, yes. game.
All right. Game. I like it. I think Ryan was setting us up because we had planned to talk about this, but I was sort of nervous that both of you would be like, I'm good. We've talked plenty. We can move it on. But I'm excited that we have the Wikipedia game back. We had a few people ask about that, ask us to bring it back. And it's one that Daryl and I sort of came up with listening to Doug Loves Movies. My late co-host Daryl Grove and I came up with where they would do it with the Leonard Maltin game and movies. But we play it with soccer players and soccer clubs. And basically the way it will work, I will give you a category. So let's say Graham is going to go first. Graham, there are two categories today. We'll do a dry run really quickly. How about that? We'll go with the categories are players that are likely to move this summer or players that have already moved this summer. Or made deals permanent. And I will give you a player. Let's say this one is four clubs and no repeats. That means he has played for those clubs only. It's not like he's played for Manchester City twice or three times. If he has, then I will tell you and you can count those clubs multiple times. But I'll say four clubs, no repeats. I'll give you some clues. And then at the end of it, Graham will bid how many clubs he needs to hear to say whether or not he can name that player, who they are. He can say zero if he knows the player outright, and he can say negative names if he knows the player so well that he can name the player and then also name some of the clubs that player has played for. That is the gist of the rules. Any like burning questions before we do a dry run?
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Graham, let's stick with this one since it's fewer clubs. He has played for four clubs, none of them twice. I would encourage you all, if you're playing, to jot down some of these notes because it helps you kind of figure it out. If you're trying to keep them in your memory or in your head, it gets a little bit complicated. Four clubs, none of them twice. He's played for his country's youth national teams since 2012. He made his senior debut in 2018.
He has 44 total appearances for that national team, but only one goal and no World Cup appearances, but he did play in the 2020 Euros, so did not go to the World Cup recently. Despite playing for at least two major clubs, he has pretty limited silverware. In total, he's won one league title and two cups in two different countries, but I would say not the league title in the place where he is currently playing for now. He is described as a versatile player who can function as a regista, defensive midfielder, central midfielder, holding midfielder, box-to-box midfielder, and center back. So four clubs, Graham, none of them twice, played for his youth national team since 2012, senior debut in 2018, 4-4 appearances, one goal, went to the Euros, no World Cup, plays in midfield.
Oh, I'm struggling with this one, I have to say. So I'm going to need a good number of teams. So I'll say three, okay? Open the bidding with three teams.
We're going to go alphabetical order. So Graham goes first. We'll go to Joe.
I'll say two.
And now we go to Ryan.
Do I have to say one?
No. If you would like to, thank you. I left that part out. If you can no longer bid or you don't feel comfortable bidding, you can challenge Joe to name that player. Then Joe, because he bid two, will get his first two clubs in chronological order, this player, and then Joe can guess.
One.
Ryan says one. We go to Graham. Graham, do you know that player or would you like to challenge Ryan to name that player?
I do not know that player, no.
So you would then say, Ryan Bailey, name that player.
Ryan Bailey, name that player.
Hey, we did it. My instructions were poor. Uh-oh. Ryan, your one club is Willem Twee.
Oh, no, that was not what I figured it was going to be.
Willem Twee, one goal for his national team, 44 appearances, plays a lot of different midfield positions. I almost gave a clue there. And has not won a ton of silverware despite playing for some fairly prominent teams.
Okay, I think I know the person's nationality.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get the name. It wasn't one of the people I thought it would be. So what do I do now?
You just have a guess as best you can. Okay, or you could say, I don't know, if you don't want to feel foolish enough to have to throw out. Because we have had people throw out completely wrong guesses for like wrong countries.
I know. And we'll laugh at you.
Yes.
Locatelli. Memo Locatelli. I know he hasn't played there, but it's whatever.
Willem Twee, his first club in the Netherlands. Any ideas for anyone else?
Yes.
Who is it, Graham?
It's Frankie de Jong, and as soon as you said the club.
Frankie de Jong. But Graham got that point anyway for challenging Ryan. So, Joe, you will start it. We'll play, but that was a dry run through, I guess.
No point, Graham.
No point
Suck
for Graham.
It. Damn.
Do I have negative points?
We'll see. You do not. You don't go negative. Don't worry.
I think Ryan should have negative, but that's fine.
I have made myself look a fool, which is kind of the object of this exercise anyway.
Yeah, but that was expected.
Specifically you, Ryan. Yeah.
Joe, so since you weren't involved, we'll start the game with you. We'll play to two or time permitting. We'll see where we are. Joe, would you like players that are likely to move or players that have already made a move permanent?
Let's do likely to move.
Okay. This gentleman has eight clubs, two of them twice. He made his debut for his national team in 2010 and is their current all-time top scorer. He has not had much success when it comes to silverware. Two league titles in two different countries and not a whole lot else. He's been a player of the month in the Premier League and in Serie A. Eight clubs, two of them twice, made his debut for his national team in 2010. So you can do some math on how old that might make him. He is his nation's current all-time top scorer, but not a ton of domestic success despite playing for eight clubs in two different countries, eight clubs in a number of different countries, but he's only won league titles in two of them. Joe, eight clubs, two of them twice, and that means that if you know the repeats, you can count them twice, and you get credit for both of them. How many teams would you like to start with?
I'll start with three.
Ooh, okay. So I think that means we go to Ryan next.
Can I say three as well?
You cannot. You have to go under or challenge Joe to name that player.
I challenge Joe.
Congratulations,
oh, I'm so scared.
Joe,
that's not how I wanted that to go. Okay, I'm ready.
His first three clubs are Anderlecht, Chelsea, and West Brom.
Okay, Anderlecht, Chelsea. I am hopeless here. Anderlecht, Chelsea.
Oh, I've got it.
Yeah, see, this is the difficulty here. Okay, so Anderlecht, if we're starting in Belgium, which is helpful, and thinking through Chelsea and West Brom, I do not
Joe,
think this is...
You can do this. Just take
okay,
a
Lukaku.
Breath.
Lukaku.
What you,
Lukaku.
There we go. It's Lukaku. Romelu Lukaku. You got it.
Yeah, Taylor, yeah. Thank you. I was this close to saying Christian Benteke and hating myself. So thank you for that.
Oh, Taylor, what's the deal with the negative clubs and the rules as well? Because mm-hmm. that was what if it came to me, that was the because I knew who it was mm-hmm. and I was going to try and that's when you can actually name the clubs, right?
Yeah. So how many clubs of Lukaku do you think you could have guessed?
Oh, I think I could do a pretty good job of the 8.
Yeah. So, like, you could have said -4, and then you would have just had to say 4 of his clubs, including, you would have to say Lukaku and 4 of his clubs. But, and for example, knowing that
Chelsea, West Brom, Everton, Man United, Inter.
Yeah.
I'm probably missing one there. But, yeah, that's my
And then also,
shot.
The repeats is key, because, for example, you know he's played for Chelsea 2 times. You can say Chelsea and Chelsea, and that's 2 clubs.
Right,
and then
okay, got
there's
it.
Also a Wikipedia rule, I think that's what we called it, that if a player goes on loan and then signs, they list that as 2 different teams. So he went on loan to Everton and then signed for them. So that would be the other repeat in this one. And then Inter Milan will soon be a 3rd repeat. It stands to reason. But Joe gets our point. I believe Ryan challenged him. So Graham, you can start this round.
Okay. Players, how do I do that?
Players that have moved or players that are likely to move.
Ah, right. From the 2 categories. Yeah. Okay. So let's go for the sake of variety, let's go for players that have already moved.
All right. This gentleman has moved this summer. 6 clubs, no repeats, and that does not include his current club. So he has moved, but Wikipedia does not yet list them because he has not played for them. So it should be 7 clubs. But then 2 of them are reserve teams, and then his current team is not listed. So really, there's like 4 senior teams here, but there's some reserve teams included. This player cites Cristiano Ronaldo, Michu, Jamie Vardy, and Robin van Persie as inspirations. He credits Virgil van Dijk and Sergio Ramos as the 2 toughest defenders he has played against. So he's played against people from different leagues. He made his senior team debut in 2016. He also has not won a ton of silverware, 2 league titles with 1 club, and then 2 cups, but not a lot with his most recent club for whom he is most well known. He reportedly achieved a world record in his age category for the standing long jump when he was 5 years old with a distance of 1.63 meters. So he can jump pretty far. He likes goal scorers. He does not like very good center backs. Hasn't won a ton of silverware, but has won some silverware and has played for 6 clubs, none of them twice. Graham, how many of those 6 clubs do you need to know to name this player?
2.
Ooh, okay. 2, and that takes us to, I think, Joe.
I'll say 1.
Ryan, can you name this player, or would you like Joe to try to name the player with 1 club?
I think I can name him, but I might make a fool of myself. Can I
do it, Ryan? Do it. Do it.
Is it Haaland?
No, you can't say it yet. You have to guess. You have to say 0 clubs.
0. Is it Haaland?
Ryan doesn't understand the rules of this game. Ryan bids 0 and thinks he knows the player. Graham, can you name the player and some of the clubs he has played for? Because if so, then you have to bid the player and then that number of clubs that you can guess.
No, I don't think I can.
All right. So do you want to challenge Ryan then?
Yes.
Ryan, say the name that you just said.
Is it Haaland?
It is Erling Haaland. Ryan gets 1 point. There we go. Erling Haaland for Bryn 2, then Bryn, then Molde 2, then Molde, then Red Bull Salzburg, and then Borussia Dortmund. So we have 1 point for Joe, 1 point for Ryan. Let's do 1 more. We'll see if we end in a full way tie or if Joe or Ryan can get the win.
Also, this is wild because we all know that Graham should be winning this game.
Okay, actually, let's do that. Let's say Graham has 1 point. For the first
whoa,
one.
Whoa. Right. Let's not go that far.
All right, fine. All right. Then, Graham, you can... but I think it was what? Joe challenged Ryan or Graham challenged? Graham challenged Ryan, so Joe gets to pick again. Joe, players likely to move or players that have already moved?
We'll say have already moved again.
All right, I'm going to make this one not hard, but slightly tricky. 8 clubs, no repeats, and his new club is listed in this one, though he has not yet played for, so that is 1 of the 8. He was born in a country that is no longer a country. He has scored goals in 2 World Cups and 2 Euros, and I think has played in an additional Euro, but he did not score in that one. But 2 World Cups, 2 Euros he has scored.
He's won silverware in Germany with three different clubs, though I only remember that he played for one, as well as a league and a cup in another country where he played most recently until this summer's transfer. We have definitely talked about this guy on the show many times, but rarely, to my mind, has he been the star of those conversations. We often talk about him, but I think not in any great detail. And he also, here's your random one that will totally help. He played in a professional volleyball tournament. I think he was eliminated in the first round. Oh. And he married his high school sweetheart.
Okay, so I'll start it at three. I don't know, and I know Graham does, so this is going to be difficult for me to get anything out of. Go ahead.
So I think that takes it to Ryan. Ryan, how many
one?
Can you name that player in fewer? Do you need fewer clubs than three?
One.
One, says Ryan. We go to Graham. Graham, can you name that player? And if you can you go negative and name some of the clubs?
Yeah, I'm going to go negative, right?
All right.
So I'm going to go negative. I think four. I can definitely get four.
Oh, goodness.
I think I know who it is now, but I cannot beat negative four. So Graham, name that player.
Okay, so the deal is here, I can just, do these have to be in chronological order, these teams?
No.
Or okay, so the clubs, I've had to name the player or first,
yep.
Or just go for
name
the clubs?
Name that player.
Okay, so the player I think is Ivan Perisic.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, nice.
Four clubs, Inter Milan, he played for Bayern Munich, he played for Dortmund, and he also played, well, can I use his current club
you
that he
can.
Signed for?
That was why I
okay.
said that one, yeah.
So Spurs, he signed for Spurs this summer. If I was going for five, I think he also played for Wolfsburg,
you are
did
correct.
He not?
He did. And Bruges, Rosellare, and Sochaux are his other clubs. But Graham Ruthven.
Good job, Graham.
Could have gone negative five, but went negative four. Graham gets the point, and we end in a three-way tie, which I feel like is a good point to end on for the reintroduction of the Wikipedia game. I apologize if my hosting skills were rusty or if my explanatory skills were rusty, but I think we got there in the end. And I would like to keep playing this somewhat regularly as we go, because I think it gets really fun. You can find different variations of it, and it gets ultra competitive pretty quickly.
I'm down.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you very much, Tater.
Yay.
And I'm sorry if I jumped the gun and didn't understand the rules at one point.
I mean, it's okay. I think I have more concern for Graham, who heard you say the name and then chose not to name any of the clubs that player played for.
I didn't want to spoil it even more. Ryan had already done enough to do that, so
fair enough.
I thought I'd give him a shot back.
Fair Such enough. Is my want. All right, gents, let's wrap this one up. Tater Rockwell, thank you very much for bringing back Wikipedia Game and for all other services to TSS Industries.
Right back at you, and I look forward to talking to you, Ryan, on some US shows.
Yes, let's do that. All right, USA, let's wave our flags. Graham, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Joe Lowry, pleasure as always, sir.
Right back at you, Ryan.
And listener, thank you so much for joining us on this one. We hope you enjoyed it. There's going to be another one on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye! Woo.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.